Greetings and good morning, Western Colorado. Thanks so much for listening to KVNF, Mountain Grown Community Radio. It's 8 o'clock, and here is your local newscast for Monday, June 24th. The West Fork Fire Complex grew to over 70,000 acres over the weekend, continuing to threaten towns along the western edge of the San Luis Valley. The Papoose, West Fork, and Windy Pass fires were combined into the complex last Sunday and continue to burn through beetle-killed spruce trees in high, rugged areas of the San Juan and Rio Grande National Forests. The Denver Post reported yesterday that firefighters in Creed were setting blazes around cabins in the hopes of diverting the flames and protecting cabins. The Post spoke with National Weather Service meteorologist Kyle Frieden, who said extreme fire conditions are expected through Thursday. At least 1,000 residents of South Fork were evacuated over the weekend, while some Creed residents voluntarily evacuated. Firefighting efforts were aimed at keeping the flames from crossing Highway 149 and protecting homes in the area. U.S. Forest Service Information Officer Ann Jeffrey noted on Sunday that firefighters are at this point powerless to fight the large walls of flames directly, given the heavy fuel of dead trees and high winds. On I See Change at the Almanac.org last week, several people discussed the smoke from nearby wildfires, and Jeff Reynolds posted that May 2013 was the third warmest May on record for the planet. According to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the global temperature has been above its 20th century average for 339 straight months, more than 28 years. KVNF's Marty Derlin reports on one effect of a hotter, drier world.
Hugh Carson has been fighting fires for more than 40 years, and although he's retired now, he was in the thick of things last year when he coordinated aircraft to battle the High Park fire near Fort Collins. Over the years, he's seen some changes.
Back when I started in the 70s and early 80s, the only major fire incidents were predominantly in Southern California. 1985 is the year that the West started burning down. And I happened to be in Utah at the time, went over to Nevada to help out as the entire northern part of the state burned down for the first of many times since. The succeeding years in the 80s, the forests in the Northwest, Oregon, and Idaho and Montana started having what we now call mega fires, fires that are 100, 200,000 acres in timber. None of us really recognized what was going on. We were too busy fighting these mega fires. But in retrospect, it has become very clear to everyone in the fire community and in the climatology business and in the weather business that the West, in fact, is burning down and will continue to burn down despite best efforts of humans to prevent it.
Carson says the cumulative effect of the persistent drought is a big part of the problem.
The fuel situation out there throughout the Western United States is of severe drought in the larger fuels. There's three types of fuels: 10-hour fuels, grass fuels, 100-hour fuels, brush and sagebrush, 1,000-hour fuels, pinyon, juniper, and timber. Now, the 1,000-hour fuels, those fuels take literally years and sometimes even decades to reacquire the fuel moisture that makes them more resistant to fire.
The situation has been made even worse by a misguided policy requiring that every fire be brought under control as soon as possible. From the 1940s into the early 1970s, says Carson, fires that would have naturally cleaned out the forests were not allowed to burn.
So what happened was, we had a huge buildup of dead and down fuels and also standing live trees. There was just too much. So that plus drought have contributed to just a horrendous situation in the United States, where you're having 600 houses burned down, 3 fatalities. And to have that happen in Colorado, which used to be known as the asbestos region, Colorado has turned into a huge fire state. You know, I worked down in Los Angeles for 2 seasons in the late 70s, and the Front Range of Colorado is the new Los Angeles. And, you know, just in the last week, we have seen very, very good proof of that.
Meanwhile, California is headed for the worst fire season in 100 years, and the West is so dry that scientists are considering new ways to describe degrees of aridity.
They have extreme, they have exceptional. Now they're talking, due to various factors, probably climate change, that they're going to establish what, super scary or something like that.
For KVNF News and I See Change at thealmanac.org, I'm Marty Derlin.
The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports a leading energy company in the Piance Basin of western Colorado is experimenting with a new method of fracking. The company, Encana USA, hopes the method will cut costs and eliminate a leading health risk for oil and gas workers. Standard fracking methods involve injecting a high-pressure mix of water, chemicals, and sand into wells to create fractures. But Encana has reportedly found that eliminating sand from the mixture doesn't harm productivity. According to the Sentinel, the process saves an estimated $300,000 per well, the cost of using about 1 million pounds of sand. It also reportedly eliminates the health risk of workers inhaling silica, a chemical compound found in 99% of fracking sand that can ultimately cause chronic lung damage or death, depending on the amount of exposure. The National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, alongside OSHA, recently put out a hazard alert regarding silica. The Sentinel spoke to Jeremy Boak of the Colorado School of Mines, who sees the new fracking procedure as feasible, but noted that it's a, quote, big leap of faith to develop a $2 million well without using sand. There's no redos on that, Boak said. According to the Sentinel, Theo Colbrin of the Paonia-based Endocrine Disruption Exchange, a nonprofit concerned with industry health issues, welcomes the new process, but also worries about the use of silica as an additive in drilling. Encana spokesman Doug Hawk claims the company doesn't use silica in its drilling operations. And now, our regular feature on Western Slope Skies from the Black Canyon Astronomical Society.
This is the first in a series of Western Slope Skies episodes about women in astronomy. We hope that in some manner these inspire our young female listeners to become involved in astronomy. On June 16, 1963, the Russians launched Vostok 6. The lone astronaut was Valentina Tereshkova, the first woman in space. She was in space for 48 orbits over 3 days. In her single mission, she logged more time in space than all the American astronauts to that date combined. Tereshkova earned a doctorate in engineering after her career as an astronaut. To this day, Ms. Tereshkova is still the only woman to fly solo in space. In 1982, Svetlana Savitskaya, also Russian, became the second woman in space. On June 20, 1983, 20 years after Tereshkova's flight, NASA launched Space Shuttle Mission STS-7. On board was Dr. Sally Ride, the first American woman in space and only the third female astronaut. Sally Ride helped design the robotic arm on the shuttle. Dr. Ride received her bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in physics from Stanford University. She also flew on STS-41 in October 1984. Dr. Catherine Sullivan, a geologist, was another crew member on this mission and the first woman to walk in space. Following a career with NASA, Ride taught physics. In 2001, she founded the Sally Ride Science Company, which creates science programs and publications for elementary and middle school students, with a particular focus on girls. Sally Ride died in July 2012, leaving a strong legacy for future female scientists. In December 2012, NASA named the final landing site of the lunar gravity probes in honor of Sally Ride. You have been listening to Western Slope Skies, produced by members of the Black Canyon Astronomical Society. I'm Brian Cashin.
The Durango Herald reports that authorities searched a 12-mile section of Middle Mountain Road above Vallecito Reservoir on Saturday, looking for missing teenager Dylan Redvine, but came up empty-handed. Around 45 people joined the La Plata County Sheriff's Department in the search. Redvine has been missing since November, and the search was one of a series of follow-up searches, and not based on any new developments in the case. The Herald reports the Durango Police Department, La Plata County Search and Rescue, and the Durango Fire and Rescue Authority were among the groups involved in the search. And that concludes your daily newscast for Monday. Thanks so much for listening to KVNF Mountain Grown Community Radio. Have a great day, everybody, and thanks so much for listening.